Welcome to Era on Air. Last year at Era's Building Physics Forum in Melbourne, Era member Claire Perry from Grün Consulting presented on how to create high-performance buildings with the help of the Passive House methodology. She spoke about the improved results and how Passive House can overcome avoidable issues with building fabric woes, such as structural degradation, condensation, and mold. She also looked at potential improvements in comfort delivery and enhanced air quality. At the heart of Claire's presentation was a detailed case study of Australia's first at-scale passive house building, Gillies Hall, at Monash University's Peninsula campus in Frankston, Melbourne. She delved into details of how to achieve the standard with a back-to-basics focus on the fundamentals of health, comfort, durability, and efficiency. Gillies Hall won the 2019 Era Award for Excellence in Sustainability. If you'd like to know more about that project, you can find it in the December 2019 issue of Ecolibrium, Era's official industry journal. In this episode of Era on Air, we bring you some highlights from Claire's presentation and her conversation with HVAC and Our Nation editor, Mark Vender.
Next speaker, where are we up to? Claire Parry, who is director of Grün Consulting. Claire will present comfortable, healthy, durable, and efficient, skipping ahead to high performance buildings. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. So, skipping ahead to high performance buildings and what we mean by that. Now, I think high performance buildings are comfortable, they're durable, they're efficient, and for some reason, none of us think we should live in one because none of us probably do. But essentially, this is what the Passive House Standard targets, and it does that through a few key parameters. And I would argue that cost effectiveness is one of those, but in Australia, we're starting from such a low baseline that it's really hard to make that argument stick. You know, the building code sort of targets all of these things in isolation. The building code is a bit of a band-aid approach. We see a problem, we find that isolated fix to make that happen. Next time round, we find out that that had some perverse effects. We apply another band-aid. What I'm going to do today is talk about an amazing project that I got to certify. I don't want to claim any credit for its design, for its construction, for its architecture. There's some fantastic team members here. Jackson Clement Burrows were the architects, did an incredible job. AECOM did most of the technical work, including building services, structural facades, ESD, acoustics, fire engineering. We were the Passive House certifier, or I was the certifier, and Multiplex, the contractor that put it all together. The building didn't happen in a vacuum. It's part of Monash's long-term plan. They have a trajectory towards net zero by 2030. They've got a large portfolio. They've got huge campuses. I think they're the largest university in Victoria. So a huge amount of infrastructure and a huge number of assets on those campuses. They've invested a lot of money in making sure that their buildings are efficient, that they represent value to them, that they are strong assets for them. Part of the work I've done for Monash started in around 2014, analysing what was, I think, their 15th Green Star building. Now, for anyone who's done building modelling, there's a huge number of assumptions that go into models, but finding out at the end of the day that it's 200% to 300% worse than your model is a bit of a shock for any client. That's the actual performance data on a residential hall on Monash's campus, which was 5-star Green Star, and Green Star doesn't necessarily have a singular focus on efficiency, so saying it's 5-star Green Star doesn't mean anything really about efficiency, but Monash expected that it would be efficient, and it just definitely wasn't. I think heating runs almost 365 days of the year in this building, just not well designed. So going from this building, so part of a portfolio, this was a common story. The Green Star buildings were more efficient than code, that's true. But the first project they did where they tested the water with the Passive House concepts, not full Passive House, it was called Building 56 at the time. They've since, you know, gone through the renaming process. They achieved, without fully focusing on Passive House, they achieved a 90% reduction in energy consumption. But 90% reduction is the magic figure in Passive House, and I don't think that that's the number we should be using in Australia, but between 70 and 90% is achievable. So Building 56 is that sawtooth retrofit asbestos-clad warehouse on the left, which went from being, I think, a facilities shed for equipment to being the facilities office. It's got its own humorous stories to go along with it in terms of what was designed and what was constructed. But that was their first test at applying, you know, Passive House light the learning and teaching building came next, and then the biomedical learning and teaching building, you know, they probably need to work on their naming at Monash, but they're getting there. So they started building more and more airtight and more efficient. BLTB, I think, had an airtightness target of 3 air changes and they got 2.9. But, you know, testing the water, not quite hitting the passive house standard, but testing what they could achieve. And BLTB actually was fantastic in that the contractor reported there was no cost premium for building passive house. So that they thought, you know, we can do this. Gillies Hall is the one in the middle there. So the Monash Peninsula campus is in Frankston. The orange block there is the site that was eventually chosen. A lot of constraints on that site, a lot of constraints on the whole campus, in fact, and this was the only site that they could really justify building on. It took up part of a car park. It doesn't face particularly, a particularly friendly orientation. It's sort of west-facing, a little bit north, but not easy to build your ideal scenario there. The brief was to deliver 150 student units, basically apartments. So these had little kitchenettes, their own ensuite, bedroom and study space. And there are 2 full apartments on the ground floor for support staff and their families. It's a moderately sized building. It's about 6,500 square metres. The target for passive house was always in the brief. Cross-laminated timber was not always in the brief, but due to the time frame of delivery, so from pen hitting paper on the brief to students moving in was 20 months. It's insanely tight by any stretch. And for that reason, CLT eventually crept its way in. Passive house became part of Monash's net zero plan. It's actually written into the plan, so they will deliver future projects above a certain cost threshold to passive house, or unless it can be demonstrated throughout the project that that's not going to be achievable. What they wanted there was energy efficiency and building quality. So building quality in terms of occupant thermal comfort, durability, asset value, basically. And eventually they will get to 100% renewable. A favourite pastime during the project was comparing what passive house looked like to what might have been done otherwise, in terms of cost, performance, everything that you could think of. A couple of figures stood out there. In terms of the roof, so the roof is substantially higher than business as usual, being above code, slightly above code. Monash always delivers Green Star, which is already 10% above code. So the roof is substantially insulated, I think just because there was space. I don't think it needed to be R7.3, but it got up that high due to space and efficiency of delivering that. The U-value of the windows and the airtightness, as you'd expect, is where things started to step above the norm. The contractor started getting a little bit nervous. The weather analysis, again, another comparison. Everybody started looking at, okay, what's different here? Passive house is delivered in Europe. Not actually technically true anymore. Passive house is international. But if we looked at Frankfurt, which is close to where the Passive House Institute is, and Frankston. Interestingly, the temperate conditions, so the ambient comfort conditions, the yellow there on that chart, they weren't so different. It's just the extremes at the other ends that started to look very different. But that, you know, that was a bit of an eye-opener. So we're designing for something that's not as extreme, but still we have a comparable level of comfort for most of the year. What needed to be fit on site, so 152 residences, meant that the building needed to be multi-level, obviously, but it also couldn't impose too heavily, both in the context of being in Frankston, which is outer suburb, but also with the single-level dwellings around it, and also the other moderately sized buildings on campus. It has bay views. It's, you know, student accommodation is getting quite nice these days. But all I have to do is say west-facing glazing, and as we approach summer, I can see all of you sweating already. Minimising that western solar gain while making these residences quite nice was high on the agenda. So the architecture, the contractor was engaged early, the structure, facades, the engineers, the ESD team. This was an ESD-led project, so a sustainability-led project. Not intentionally, but it truly was, you know, everybody listened to what the consultants had to say on that. I guess everybody was nervous about summer, as they should have been. A densely occupied building facing west, as I mentioned. Getting that shading right was one of the most important parts of that project. So AECOM undertook a lot of parametric design to get what it was realised as is these sort of rust-coloured fins, which are across the entire building, but where they stick out perpendicular from the facade is actually where the glazing sits. So the views aren't interrupted. One of the requirements of the client, the ultimate client, was Monash Residential Services, which is a body within Monash University who deliver the residents or the residential experience. they required that essentially each student had their own kitchen. Doesn't really play out well with internal heat gains being minimised. Everybody had a fridge, everybody had a stovetop, everybody had, I guess, their ensuite as well, all their student appliances, things that can't really be controlled, but things that need to be designed in and accounted for. Predictive modelling told us that this building was going to be nice and warm. So this is in June, in middle of winter. And you can see it's sitting at 25, which is actually probably a bit too warm for winter. And the nice thing about this building is that we can reject that heat. Now, it's important also to note that this building is delivered without any heating and cooling systems. It's pretty standard for student residences not to have cooling. They nearly always have heating, but that's because our buildings are always cold and that's an easier thing to deal with. So in comparison to a standard project on the Monash campus, this building was pretty damn nice. In January, we can see that the passive house building, it does get hot. It, you know, this is the predictive modelling. It got up to around 30 degrees at the beginning of January. But in comparison to the business as usual case, it didn't get as hot. And some of the horror stories we heard from the other buildings on the Clayton campus, which is Monash's other campus, is that some of the rooms were 45 degrees in the middle of summer and students had to be relocated. One of the things that was designed in to deal with this comfort disparity was a simple ceiling fan, and it was just providing that level of comfort to the client and the contractor, who, you know, does bear the risk of delivering something which fails spectacularly, but also to me, it was nice for me as the certifier to see that this level of analysis was done. So the mechanical solution was really simple. It was the extract from the bathroom to meet code. The makeup air for that system was delivering ventilation into the room and the ceiling fan. And then we had operable windows, which is mandatory in every passive house project as well as every other project. The central areas, so the corridors, were naturally ventilated. They have automated windows to ensure that they actually are operated because students can't be relied on for much at all. So there's a bit of night purge going on in there. The level of detailed documentation was absolutely insane. You can see there the upper five levels of the building are the CLT. The ground level is concrete, and that was in the interest of program, so getting building on site while we're waiting for the CLT to arrive at that time from Italy. A few construction photos, so ground concrete, five levels of CLT. It's a fairly repetitive design. All the windows are the same in all the rooms. Why would you complicate this if you didn't have to? All the bathrooms were pods, so once every floor was finished, bathroom craned in, simplified. As part of the certification process, which was my role on site, it was a little bit of a sort of comfort role for the contractor, as well as the audit role, which is the certification. So coming along to site and checking that the insulation was installed under the slab, that's a certification role. Coming along and making sure that they'd taped things correctly, and I did some site tours with efficiency matrix. That's not something I'm meant to check. I check the airtightness, the blow it or test at the end. But telling them that, yes, that tape looks pretty good, that was some hand-holding. A bit of a heart attack at one moment on site when we looked at these. The shading was fixed onto a bracket, which was then meant to be fixed onto the outside of the insulation. We get to site and about 300 of these brackets have been directly fixed to the CLT, not per the structural engineer's design, but as per the structural contractor's expectation. Half of them are installed, so there's not really a lot we could do about that. Site had to keep moving, but they did suspend this while we checked whether that was okay, and thank God it was. So this was another part of the work that we did. We did the 3D structural thermal bridge modelling for this. So I think everyone's breath was held for a few days there. That's not what I intended to do with my Melbourne Cup long weekend, but that is what I did with it, checking whether that shading bracket. So, you know, contractor's favourite two sayings are, she'll be right and that'll do. Passive house, that's not very good. But it worked. And, you know, there was an energy penalty. So we checked. So there's two reasons we needed to check. This one was whether there wasn't the energy penalty could be borne by the project. And the other one was to make sure that there was no condensation or internal issue going to occur here. You know, the windows, as you can see, were installed directly above that, making sure that that wasn't going to be an issue in the long term. Going on site, I mean, passive house certification doesn't require anyone to go on site or the certifier to go on site and check these things, but this is a pretty big project. It was a milestone project. I was excited to go on site as much as possible or as much as I could be bothered driving to Frankston. Checking that the glass that got installed was the glass that was specified. You would be not surprised at all to hear that quite often you go to site and the glass isn't anything like what was specified. They did a test window install, so checking that for them and saying, yep, looks good. Another part of the, you know, the providing comfort, hand-holding bit. checking that the ceiling fans were installed. So as I showed you, the comfort was paramount and it was highly dependent on whether this ceiling fan was there, so making sure that they were there, checking that the ducts were, or the ducts and the pipes were insulated as well, checking that solar panels went on. This building is, it's plastered in solar panels on the roof, but that is actually part of the passive house compliance, is that it actually did need some of these solar panels to be there. So checking that they were the right specification, that they were there, that the ventilation system, which was a bit of a beast, was the right one. Blow it or test day. I've never seen this many people on site before in my life. It's the only day we could get all the consultants and the technical advisors to the project in one place, because everybody was so fixated on whether or not this building would be airtight. Seeing 50 people running around looking for minuscule holes was quite funny. We did find some bigger holes, which were surprising. You know, you ask if the contractor's ready and they're, yes, we've been around site 100 times, we've checked. And then it's like, what about that? I can see outside. Never ceases to surprise me. And then the passive house certification, which was a big day. Everyone was a little bit disappointed that the plaque's only about this big. I'm not sure that any of the students would have actually noticed it. I'm not sure where it's installed, but no one will have seen it. So how does it perform? So students move in, heat wave. Fabulous. Now, the building hadn't settled, you know, so that there was no reason to believe that, you know, we'd get comfort day one moving in. So everyone was moving in, don't forget, so doors and windows were open, left, right and centre, and nobody understood how the building was meant to work. So it did get a bit hot. Early February in Melbourne, you have to expect that there'll be some peaks over 40. In the longer term, the building did start to settle down, and you can see it's comfortably under 25 by the end of March, and, you know, the ceiling fans do operate. The students did need some hand-holding through what to expect from this building. The worst bit is that we can't take them to Clayton campus and put them in another building and say, see, it is better. You know, 25 degrees in summer, you can cop it. In the middle of winter, it's pretty nice in there. One of the things that we didn't account for correctly was that students, or around 80% of the students, do leave during the mid-semester breaks. So the temperature started to dip, and at that time some portable heaters were put in the building to help the remaining 20% be comfortable without too many complaints. Lessons learnt. So at the start, the entire team, except for me, were pretty dubious. Well, and the passive house consultant on the ESD side. But everybody's, I wouldn't say everybody, but, you know, most people are pretty impressed and converted. So there is potential for passive house in the Australian climate. Designing from first principles is absolutely key. You can't take your rule of thumb and wedge passive house in next to it. Taking things from the fundamental level and pulling them along until they work. Focusing on the detailing, I'm sure many of you have encountered, conflicting requirements along facade design. So vapour control, air tightness, fire. Love fire engineers. The building is fabulous. It operates really well. It's still got its own teething problems. It's only been in operation since February. It's still a bit of tuning to go, but it's going really well. Other lessons learnt from the client side, so this is client feedback, is that early engagement of both the contractor and the entire team, not just the architect and the client sitting there and coming up with a building design and then saying, okay, now what do we do with it? Getting the entire team in a room early. Having a functional monitoring and performance system has been reported by the client to be, you know, the client now manages this building and they're learning what that means on site, and total commissioning as a non-negotiable. So you can't have a high-performing building and just turn it on and expect it to work. The building has only been in operation, as I said, we're in October, that's 9 months, and it's already won quite a few awards. Last week it won the Premier Sustainability Award and the Australian Timber Design Award for Sustainability. A massive success, but it's a kind of a watch this space one. We don't have the full performance data to report on yet.
Just with that presentation, I guess, what was the main thing do you think you wanted people to take away from that presentation?
I guess the simplicity of the project. So it was taken back to some fundamental elements, and they were just done really well and with some amazing outcomes. Whether that came across.
Well, I guess for me, I was listening to the experience of the project. Mm. It was the story of how it all came together, some of the challenges, how you overcame them. Yeah, but so when you say the simplicity of the project, how does that compare with other projects you've worked on? Are the other projects sort of crazy complex or
Well, I mean, I've done, I guess there's a historic approach to sustainability in that you take what you get and then you apply a level of technology to fix issues that potentially shouldn't have occurred in the first place. But with any passive house project, but particularly that one, it was starting from scratch and saying, okay, so what are the basic objectives and fundamentally how do we get there? And it kind of flipped it on its head a bit. So that project is super low tech, very passive in the sense that it has no heating and cooling.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about your role as a certifier there. Mm-hmm. So it's not really you coming in and just ticking things off and you're participating in the project, right? Yeah. So can you just talk a little bit about that role in this project?
Yeah. So I became a certifier because in Australia it was historically almost impossible. Well, it was very difficult to get buildings certified. And my favourite role has actually been the passive house designer, much more heavily involved with the project. Passive house in sort of a developing market, it's actually necessary to help people feel a level of comfort and help them along the journey of getting to a certified project. And every project's different, but with such a big project, a milestone project, being involved the whole way through was something I wanted to do, but also something that they asked for. And yeah, I was available. I was probably nosier than I needed to be. Visited site a lot. it was more of an assisting role than a compliance or, yeah.
Yes. And it sounded like the relationships were like that with the rest of the team. That it was very much a collegial atmosphere, working together rather than I'm coming to check the work that you've done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You have done some work before with Monash, and you did talk a little, and this comes back to the previous presentation, you sort of mentioned there was passive house light approach on some other buildings that just couldn't do full passive house.
Yeah.
This is the full deal. Where do you stand on that? I mean, are you, if it's passive house, it's passive house, let's just do it to that standard, or, you know, other projects you see the need to compromise?
Yeah, I. When you do start to go down the route of applying some passive house principles, or, you know, passive house is just a package of principles. When you start to go down that path of applying bits and pieces of something, you do run the risk of having a few perverse outcomes that of not doing something the whole hog. And, I mean, passive house seems strict in the sense of current building practice, but it is actually the absolute minimum you need to do to have a comfortable building with no, you know, risk of condensation. I like the idea of people trying to do as much as they can, but I try to highlight that that's, you know, that's fraught with a bit of risk of the outcome being compromised.
There was the use of CLT on this project, and it was interesting when you had that example of, okay, so we've got the shading attached directly to the CLT, which wasn't what we were expecting. Were there challenges involved in modelling a material like that, or is the package already designed so you can just plug it straight in? Because it's a new relatively new material, right?
Yeah. So what the building's built of is, I guess, of reasonably little relevance to passive house. The fact that it was CLT, yeah, it's new. It's considered really highly innovative in Australia, but it's really well understood overseas. Everyone was a little bit nervous around moisture, basically. Thermally, it was fantastic to work with because it meant that those thermal bridges were almost taken care of by default. But modelling it in terms of passive house and thermal bridging, it's something that we were pretty comfortable doing.
When you talked about the students each having their own space, and I guess there's a behavioural thing here, right? Talked about the education, trying to explain to them, look, this is how the building works.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you've got each person in their own space, and I was just imagining there must have been students who just came in automatically with their own little heater, their own little air conditioning unit. How did Monash deal with that?
Yeah, so there's been some, I've heard a few stories, so anecdotally, Monash have reported back. So as proof of concept, they've monitored this building extensively, you know, and there are some rooms where they notice that, you know, at 3 o'clock on a weekday afternoon, suddenly this room was 28 degrees and this room in isolation. And it's basically evidence that, yeah, every student's doing their own thing and this student had a heater. The other complication is that you don't just have a homogeneous population. You know, you've got all these students that are from, you know, various cultures and climates around the world, and that student wanted it to be 28 degrees in their room. And in a way, you have to kind of cop it. In some ways, you need to control it. But in terms of what you can do about it, sometimes you just need to account for it.
That's sort of what I wanted to cover about the project. And we already got a lot of information from your talk just about this event, the conference.
Yeah.
You coming here, what are you sort of excited to hear about? What are the things that you're keen to learn about here?
I'm excited to learn from a lot of the experts that I, you know, I read their papers, and, you know, a lot of the technical evidence that I rely on is, you know, these people are here. So it's really exciting to hear from them firsthand and meet them. And it's really exciting to see that we're moving in much the same direction as a group, as a body, and AIR is highly supportive of the intent of what, you know, the work they're all trying to do. So it's a very niche conference, but it's a great group of people.
You've been working in this space for a while now. Like, I mean, how many years would you say you've sort of been working with Passive House and building physics in general?
I started out in mechanical engineering and sustainability. Passive House for around 10 years, and I've kind of only recently started calling myself a building physics engineer. So maybe, yeah, 2 or 3 years. But, you know, it's always been part of my work, understanding that fundamental science, but the term is reasonably new for me. It's nice to have a name for it.
Outside of this conference, in the rest of the big world, have you seen many signs of awareness growing? Do you have any of those moments where you go, oh wow, people are actually catching on to this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so I started my practice, I started Gruen by demand 5 years ago, and it was, you know, it was an idea that played in my mind for a few years before that, but just seeing that it was a bit of a demand for that, you know, delivering great high performance buildings, and, you know, what that looked like, and the fact that it wasn't a random process that, you know, sort of caught onto an idea here or there and threw them at a building, that Passive House could take off, and that building physics had a place in building design. For me, yeah, it's been fantastic, and I think we're at a really sort of, it's loud at the moment, like everybody is talking about it. I don't know if I'm in a bubble or not, but it's everywhere. The building code, right down to that.
Do you ever have those sort of barbecue conversations where someone goes, what do you do? And you go, oh, I work on a Passive House. And they go, yeah, I know about that. Or hasn't quite got to that level.
No, sometimes I bring it up and somebody, you know, occasionally we'll go down and have this conversation, and then somebody will be like, oh, no, that's not what I meant. But every now and then somebody goes, yeah, no, I saw that, you know, in a magazine, or I've seen that project, but they didn't realise it was special in that way, or something about that. But yeah, I've had to learn a different way of talking about it, for sure, and I don't always use the word Passive House, but yeah, I like to point at projects which right back at the start I had nothing to point at and say, or show people and say, you know, this is what it's about in Australia, and now I can say, come to my house.
Yeah.
Have a look. Yeah. Actually not have a look, feel what it's like.
Because you did mention that at the beginning, that you moved into,
yeah,
so this was just very recently you moved into your own Passive House, that you designed.
Passive House designer, yeah.
Okay.
But we've had an architect on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who knows how to work with space and light and way more creative than me. But I can tell them why the wall's not thick enough. And I think all architects have this appreciation that space isn't just aesthetic, but, you know, that acoustic comfort and thermal comfort are just as important as, you know, something's bright and light and feels good. It feels good for extra reasons now.
That was Claire Perry speaking to AIR's Mark Vender after the Building Physics 2019 Forum in Melbourne. As they mentioned, there is much going on in the world of Passive House, as HVAC and R professionals and practitioners look for ways to increase building performance, as well as occupant well-being and comfort. It's likely you'll see more and more of the builds, standards, and technologies showcased popping up in new spaces, so make sure to keep an eye out. Passive House is a topic of discussion that ERA's Building Physics Special Technical Group, or STG, frequently covers, and something that will undoubtedly come up at the Building Physics 2020 Forum. Preliminary details have been announced for this event. For more information, head to era.org.au/buildingphysicsforum. Equilibrium is also currently profiling a Sydney Passive House build by ERA affiliate Stephen Cuthbert. The first in the series of articles can be found in the April edition of ERA's official journal. And last but not least, Claire Perry is one of ERA's 100 faces. To help celebrate ERA's centenary, the Institute is highlighting notable people, projects, places, and things that have had a significant impact on ERA and the HVAC and our industry at large. To view those profiles, visit era100.org.au. That's all for this episode of ERA On Air. Thank you for listening. If you liked what you heard, if you learned something new, or if you're interested in HVAC and R, please consider subscribing to the podcast and sharing it. In our next episode, we'll be discussing 100 years of ERA and the future of the industry in a roundtable discussion with two former ERA presidents, ERA fellow Sean Truick and ERA member Anya Hampton. I'm Mark Spencer, and for more on the Australian Institute of Refrigeration, Air Conditioning and Heating, and to learn about the industry, please visit era.org.au.